Welcome to the Mundane Festival. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on the blacklist and know this is American history. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Thursday, April 11th, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 346. I have a super special return guest. You know him, you love him, Randolph Terrence from the Three Guys On podcast. I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. This episode's up early because I said, you know what, I'm probably going to be busy this weekend, and I'm excited to share this episode with you, and I'm going to get it out of the way. I'm not going to get it out the way. It's just up early, probably going to be busy, and Randolph and I talked about the film The Best of Enemies, starring Sam Rockwell and Taraji P. Henson, the number seven movie in the country, according to Box Office Mojo, based on the box office numbers. And we're going to talk about that. And we talked about the Kyle Korver article from the Players Tribune, the Kyle Korver essay. And I got off work. I went to Best Buy. I'm going to make myself a grilled chicken salad tonight. Super excited about it. Went to this new deli. Well, actually, this new market that it's not new, but it's new to me. It's this place called Uncle Giuseppe's in Ramsey, New Jersey. Really incredible deli. Good market. It's a good grocery store, but the deli is pretty impressive. So that's my life. That's what I'm excited about these days. you can tell show business is going really well for me. No plugs, just I went to a cool market and got some good grilled chicken, and I'm going to make a nice grilled chicken salad, fresh. With what am I gonna put on it? I got some cherry. No, I don't have cherry tomatoes. I have just those small tomatoes that you can kind of cut up. Maybe with some carrots, some matchstick carrots, some cucumber. What else? Onions, spinach. Pretty fucking excited about that, ladies. So yeah, just sharing this. And then what else is coming up? I am low-key kind of close to a big announcement. I feel it in my bones. And when it happens, I will let you know about it and share the news. What else? This week's been pretty good. It's been busy. Busy doing the TPS reports. And making things happen at the day job. What else? My dad's birthday. Happy birthday to my dad this weekend. One thing about parents that get older. I think just parents in general. I was talking to my parents on the phone on Sunday, and my dad was talking about movies, and he was talking about Clint Eastwood, and he was like, yeah, what's that movie that Clint Eastwood did? And I said, Oh, you're talking the last thing he did, the mule? He was like, yeah, it looks pretty good. I said, ah, yeah, it was pretty good. You know, I see, I want to see that. And I just kind of made that a mental thing. And my dad was like, you know, he's like, he'll be 78 this year, this Sunday. And he was like, yeah, you know, I've always liked Clint Eastwood. I'm not a fan of his politics, but that movie looks pretty good. I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. So I bought it for him. And I sent it to him from Amazon. And I think it might have been the first time that I sent like a I've sent him movies and stuff, but like I did the little gift wrapping thing that they offer at Amazon, got him that. And I think my mom got a little jealous. And she went and got the package from the when they rang on the doorbell and whatnot. And then like a couple hours later, she calls me and is trying to like tell me shit that my dad did that she didn't like. Like she was telling on him. And then she mentioned something about a flashlight not working. So I, in turn, just ordered her a flashlight, this special kind of flashlight lantern thing that I have one too. It's an Energizer one, and it's like a lantern, and it's like 300 plus hours of, if you keep it on low, you can have it for 300. It lights up for like 300 plus hours or whatever, and it's a really cool lamp. I actually used that lamp during when there was no power in North Jersey for like 3 or 4 days. I think it was like during Hurricane Sandy. So it's a good flashlight. It's an Energizer. What the fuck is it? I'll tell you, since I didn't know that I was going to be talking about this flashlight. But yeah, so I ordered that for her, and because she got jealous. I think she legitimately got jealous because she said, I don't get jealous when other people get stuff. And I'm like, dude, it's his birthday. I get you shit for your birthday. Sometimes I get my mom more shit, but then she's not as appreciative as my dad, I would say. Do you have parents like that where if you get them something and they kind of don't give a shit, but if you didn't get them anything, they'd be upset? You kind of got, my mom's like that. And sometimes your parents do things. And if you're comics and you're listening to this, do you ever, like when you deal with your parents in certain ways, just in any way that you deal with your parents, you're like, oh yeah, that's why I'm a comic. That's probably why I'm taking a stab at show business for that appreciation. Part of it is for like, you want to be good at your craft, but at the same time, I want to be good at my craft. I want to be a great actor. I want to be a great comedian. I want to achieve all these things, but it's also like, you want that approval from your parents. And although I have extremely, I would say that for better or for worse, I hit the lotto. I hit the lotto with my parents, but there's certain things where you're just like, oh yeah, that's why I do comedy. So I've just started to realize that like in my late 30s, and it's something that I've just thought about. Do you guys ever think about that? Your parents or just any type of career that you're in or whatever it is that you're like, oh, that's why it's either, that's why I'm in the comedy. Oh, that's why I am the way I am. So let me find this thing here. All this stuff is like, it's got the ellipses on it, but I'm going to find this shit. It's taking a second to load. The hell? Come on. Okay, so it's an Energizer waterproof LED lantern, weather-ready folding like... Shit, why can I not read? Energizer waterproof LED lantern, weather-ready folding light, 350-hour runtime, 500 lumens. And I got it. It was like... it's like 20 bucks or so, but it's really nice. It's really cool. It's a really cool flashlight lantern thing, and I've had mine for the longest time and really love it. So I just kind of got her something, and actually the stuff, like, you know, I got and ordered the batteries with it. I'm a good fucking son. And so she gets it, And she doesn't even say thank you. She's like complaining about something else. I was like, hey, how about thank you? How about a thank you? How about like she, this is me trying to like get in, like, how about the, all right, I love, how about the thank, how about that? Parents, you got to love them. But I love them to death, and I wish I had more money to give them shit. But, you know, when you're an actor who has a day job and who's been on basic cable television shows, some premium, but, you know, basic. I've been on a couple TV shows and Netflix and stuff. Like, you're not, you know, you're the little co-starring roles. You can buy your parents' shit from Amazon and not take a big hit, you know, kind of. So let's just get to Randolph. I've riffed enough for you guys, and I know you're just ready and excited to hear this conversation that Randolph and I had about Best of Enemies. I gave Randolph this as a homework assignment. You know, I saw this trailer a few months ago. I forget the movie that I saw, and I was like, okay, this is going to be good. This is going to be interesting. And then later everybody caught on, and they were like, oh, I don't, this is another Green Book. It's not. It's and people were like, oh, I'm not going to see that. And people in Shadow and Act told Black Twitter to not see it. And a lot of people responded in kind by saying that they weren't going to see it. And then as a comic, you're kind of like, I'm going to, no, as somebody who loves movies and somebody who, you know, I don't feel like I'm bucking the system by going to see this shit, but I was intrigued because, one, I didn't know the story about Ann Atwater, and I was interested in seeing it. And I'm not going to let a publication on the internet, an internet publication, tell me what to see and what not to see. It's always nice to read reviews and everything like that, but I'm never going to let them dictate to me what I'm going to see. So I saw this movie, and I think I low-key got Rod to go see the joint too. And him and Karen went to see that joint. And Randolph saw it as a good pal, and we decided to talk about it. And here it is, me and the great Randolph Terrence talking The Best of Enemies. You know, I was going...
Are you recording already?
We're going now.
Hey!
I was going to... I found this this pineapple juice at the grocery store that I'd never seen before. It's called, like, Libby's pineapple juice, just straight.
Uh-huh.
You don't really see that. Normally, you just see it in the can. And I was trying to find, like, some shooters or something, but they didn't have it at the grocery store. I was going to text you to see what's a good liquor to go with pineapple. Rum.
Okay. Rum.
Better than vodka?
Vodka.
Vodka.
I'm not a vodka drinker, so I don't, okay. I don't know.
Yeah, usually I would do Kettle. If I did, it would be Kettle One or Belvedere, I guess. Or Grey Goose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Grey Goose is the one everybody seems to like.
Yeah, I had a buddy that was kind of like a big brother, and when I was in grad school, he would always bring something to a party, always bring alcohol. If you know, like he would always get Kettle One, so that's kind of what I went with.
Yeah, that's a good one. Like I said, I'm not a vodka drinker, so you'd have to talk to Mike B.
Yeah, he's a vodka
vodka
aficionado.
Yeah, he likes that shit. Although that Hennessy, I let him drink. Larry XL got me some of that white Hennessy.
Okay.
A late birthday present. Jesus
okay.
Jesus Christ, that shit is good.
I'm supposed to be working with him in June or July.
Yeah, you have a good time. You're a good dude.
Yeah, somewhere out in Pennsylvania. Well, I guess we should just get into this movie, man.
Yeah, man.
The Best of Enemies. Came out.
You want to give people we're going to spoil the shit out of this, right?
Yeah, we're going to spoil it. I mean, it's history. I mean, I'll just read the Google blurb and we'll get into it. the true story of the unlikely relationship between Ann Atwater, an outspoken civil rights activist, and C.P. Ellis, a local Ku Klux Klan leader. During the racially charged summer of 1971, Atwater and Ellis come together to co-chair a community summit on the desegregation of schools in Durham, North Carolina. The ensuing debate and battle soon lead to surprising revelations that changed both of their lives forever. This movie was written and directed by Robin Bissell. It's based on the book by Osha Gray Davidson, and it stars Sam Rockwell as C.P. Ellis and Taraji Henson as Ann Atwater. Randolph, could you turn down the TV or whatever's on in your house and then give me your thoughts on this film?
Well, first of all, there's nothing on. That was my wife.
Is that your lovely wife?
Yeah, I was in a sitcom, Randolph.
In that case, give the queen my best. I thought you had the TV on. Okay.
I actually had the TV off. I was in the room. She wants me out of the room. She's laying in there to lay down.
Did she eat your food as well?
Not today.
God, that was That was like the best moment ever. Because like you're
got taxes done today, so
you got. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Got it.
You gonna say I'm sorry? I didn't mean to cut you off.
I just wanted to know. Well, when she took your cheeseburger,
it's like the best moment. And yeah,
it's a funny. If I got to put that in a film somewhere or a TV show, where some like an alpha male strong guy gets just emasculated by his wife.
What did I don't you? Know if I'm, I don't know. If
you're
I'm
not. A, you weren't a met, but yeah, it wasn't on that. But still, it's. I'm speaking.
Yeah, she came in. She swooped in and got the hamburger.
Did she say, I just wanted to know what yours tasted like. Did she say that? What did she say?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah, that was so
funny.
What
do you do? You got your own. I just want to see what yours tastes like. She was already like taking it out of my hand.
You might have been in the middle of scolding me about something, and she just like...
swooping in to get the hamburger.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what started you calling me sitcom Randolph.
Yeah, that's like at the opening credits of your sitcom character, and then you just make the face like, and then the screen
credits. The wah-wah face.
Yeah.
Wah-wah.
Whatever the theme song, we're a family together. And you're just like, well, I guess she ate my burger.
I guess this is what I'm doing.
Guess I'm going to bed hungry. So what are your thoughts on this film? What are just give your overall thoughts on this film?
The first thought I had was I wasn't going to go see it because if you watch the trailer, it's on some Green Book ish, you know, which is the same thing I was texting with Mike Finazzo just today, and he said. And he was like, I'm not going to go see this because this is some Green Book stuff. You know, this is another Green Book, so I have no desire to see this.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first initial thought. There's no way I'm going to see this bullshit. And it's going to win Oscar of the Year. So, like, I'm not going to go see it. You know, but then you talked me into seeing it. I wanted to go see it, and I have to say that I was... I don't know if pleasantly surprised is the word, but it's not the Green Book.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's way more true to the story. At the Green Book, we have no idea. Because according to the family of the main, one of the main characters, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I'm more inclined to believe them based on everything I've read about Dr. Shirley and watching the man do his own interviews and stuff like that.
Like,
you didn't do any work while you wrote this. And Green Book is clearly written from the perspective of this man's son who's trying to make his father look like a god.
Right.
You know, so the movie is really about this man, this white man, I don't know, shedding racism, which I don't know if I believe that, you know.
Right.
And not having to give anything, the black character having to give everything of himself and the white man didn't have to give anything.
Yeah.
But in this movie, the white man gives up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he even said that at the end.
Yeah.
You know, although I have my own thoughts on that. We'll come back to that later.
Sure.
My own thoughts on what he gave up, but we just want to go chronologically,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I thought it was, I don't know if I put it up there with Remember the Titans, but it's close.
Now, people don't like Remember. When I tweeted what I tweeted last Saturday, a couple days ago, I saw this movie, you know, and it was in a mixed crowd. I said this in the intro of the current episode that I've got up. It was I think it's one of the it's up there to me. It's one of the best I've seen a film dealing with racial injustice and things of that nature since Remember the Titans, which surprised me because Remember the Titans was a film that surprised me, one, because it was dealing with racial issues. It was dealing with racial issues and it was a Disney movie. I was wondering how deep they were going to go. And I know we're discussing other movies before we get into this one, but I think it's apropos
it all goes together.
Yeah, it goes together.
They all go together.
There's a method to the madness, but, and it just to put that into perspective for me, because you know, a movie is good and it's grounded when the nigger count is high.
Right.
when the white characters are saying nigger freely, and you know, and it was just, and there were because that made me, that locked me in.
Yeah, it was pretty free. It was very true to form.
Yeah,
in this one,
mm-hmm.
it was very true to form. You know, it was very true to form. Also, the Uncle Tom count was up nicely. In this one too, which I liked,
and every character, all the main characters from Ellis and Atwater on down, like as far as like the people that were involved in the charrette. Let me ask you this: Did you know what a charrette was?
No,
I didn't either.
Never even heard that term.
Neither have I.
I was like, "What's charrette?"
Yeah,
I thought I'd never heard that term. The way they explained it, I was like, "Well, it makes sense."
Mm-hmm.
But I never heard that. I've never heard of negotiating like that.
Yeah,
like, and this whole process where you have this many people and this many people, and you're going to say this thing, then we're going to talk about it, and we're going to agree upon it. We're going to spend a whole day doing this. I never even thought of no shit like that.
Yeah, and it's a meeting in which stakeholders in a project attempt to resolve conflicts and map solutions.
You looked it up.
Yeah, I looked it up. Yeah, no, I did, because I was first. That was something because I almost wanted to pull out my phone in the theater, but I didn't want to be that dude. But that was something that was important to me too. I learned something, and it's one of those movies that it was. So again, I was going to say all of the actors. The main and supporting, they were three dimensional. Now you can argue that some might have had more to do than others. You know, you knew more mm-hmm. about the lives of C.P. Ellis and his family, and not Ann Atwater.
What do you do about Ann Atwater and his family? So it's kind of about C.P. Ellis,
right?
So is that because a white man made the movie? Then I'm only going to tell the part of the family life that I know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that why? We don't know anything about the man who ran the Corvette. We don't know anything about his life. We know he was doing pretty well for himself. He's playing golf.
Yeah, Bill Riddick.
Playing golf at that time, that's like the hallmark of you're doing okay.
In 1971.
Right, and you're shooting golf balls into a drink glass like a white executive.
Yeah.
Madman.
Yeah.
You know? Because when they show, I'm like, who's this white dude? What the fuck? And then the black girl comes, his wife comes in, she's black. I'm like, who is it, secretary? And then mm-hmm. they're like, what the fuck? Oh, you're in his house? I'm thinking this is an office or some shit like that.
That was an interesting reveal.
Yeah, this guy's doing well. And I don't know if what that was meant to show you? Again, because I'm assuming, can you look up the director and tell me if he's white?
He is white. This is his first feature film.
Like, was he trying to tell us something about this black? If it was a black director, I would say he was trying to tell us something about the black community or something. This being a white cat, I don't know. He might have just been going by what he knew of the man.
Well, they did talk about class. You know,
he
like
said it, yes.
Yes, he was
that.
From.
That's why I said that Uncle Tom was coming out nicely.
Yeah, he was like, "I'm from Raleigh." He's like, "That's still the North."
Yeah,
Raleigh's North. Like what? Like fucking 20 minutes?
Not that far.
Yeah. So it's like a whole nother world. And what was interesting? Yeah. So I don't want to jump around too much, but I thought that I really liked all three of those characters. I liked that they had.
I didn't like the way they made her act.
Oh, Taraji.
There was a couple of things. I told Mike Manazzo, I said the prosthetic breasts were really pulling me out of the story.
I mean, she was big woman. You saw what she looked like, though.
I know. She's a big woman. I was like, listen, you could put prosthetic breasts on Taraji.
Mm-hmm.
She looks like Taraji Hinton in fake breasts.
Well, yeah. I tried to, I mean.
She was doing like a stage play. You know how when somebody does a stage play and like the stage costuming looks like, oh yeah, we're watching a play.
Well, the reviewer.
we're watching Tyler Perry dressed like Madea.
That's what the reviewer said. Like it meant she mentioned, I think it was a woman that did it, that wrote it, was reminiscent of Madea. But I think they just always seem to have an axe to, we'll get to that. But I did hear that. But I think if you don't have her in the movie, it doesn't get made. I don't know if it gets made.
I mean, size-wise, Queen Latifah.
Yeah. I mean, if Queen Latifah wanted to do it, but maybe this was something Taraji wanted to do. I mean, you get two Oscar nominees in the movie. Well, you got one Oscar winner in Sam Rockwell, and Taraji got nominated. You know, it didn't take me out of the movie, but when I knew Anne Atwater was a large woman, so I guess.
Yeah, I had looked her up also, so I knew that she was that size, and that's the thing. I was like, her face ain't that size, her legs ain't that size, her arms ain't that size.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just these big fake titties that, you know. So I just focused on that and the fact that, remember the scene where he goes to meet them to eat lunch and she was eating ribs?
Yeah.
She's eating the shit like a fucking savage, dude.
Yeah,
That did you notice that?
I mean, she kind of was, yeah.
That kind of bothered me. Like, why is she eating that rib like that?
She was hungry.
a big beef rib too, not like a regular small rib, like a big fucking Bronto burger,
like a Fred Flintstone joint.
A beef rib. The more than big motherfuckers.
I didn't even think about that.
Savage.
I just knew she was big and she was eating or whatever, but it didn't really do. You know, I was kind of hating on the guy playing Bill Riddick. I was like, I could have had that part.
You know, I thought that was your role, right?
That was my role, yeah.
I thought that was either your role or what's her brother from Atlanta?
God, I can't be compared to him all the time.
I mean, I was just like, that's y'all's role, man.
But that was a good... He could have.
I saw him. I said, look at Chris.
I would have rocked it. He was great.
Yeah, he's good.
Babu Cisse. He's a British dude, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was good. Everybody was good, and it just even the guy who was the black dude that was saying that you know, he called the guy brother. That was a pivotal scene.
Yeah,
the black guy who says.
Yeah, I didn't like that scene.
You didn't like it.
I was no. I didn't like it because for the same reason that Ann Atwater didn't like it.
Well, that of course. Well, but
and that's what it's supposed to do. So it did right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it did. The scene did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Because I was like, if y'all sit your stupid ass down, I thought that same shit.
Well, that's the thing. Like, were you talking in the theater, kind of?
In my head, I was a lot.
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah.
through the movie a lot.
Because that scene, like when C.P. Ellis says, "Did that nigga call me brother?" I was like, yeah. I was like, "They're not fucking around here. They're not fucking around." This movie, like this, the guy that did this, Robin Bissell, he produced. This is his first film, but he did produce The Hunger Games, Seabiscuit, Pleasantville, The Free State of Jones.
He knows
race.
About whiteness.
Yeah, Free State of
Whiteness.
Yeah.
Did do The Free State of Jones. Well, I never saw it.
I didn't care for it.
And I know it's based on a true story, too, but I didn't want to see it.
I didn't care for it because Kerry Russell said nigger in it, and it didn't like when one of my white starlets said nigger.
Oh, the nigger count was high in that one too?
It didn't matter how high the nigger count was. It's just that she said it. She said, "Them's nigger dogs," and I was like, "This motherfucker."
Did she say like she's really familiar with it?
Yeah, and I was like, I clutched my pearls. But
it's always that moment when they say it like they're familiar with it. Like when Magneto said it, you were like, "Oh, you said that shit a lot." Dude.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god, I used to kill with that bit. I said, if you want to see your favorite white actors say nigger, 12 Years a Slave is the one. If you want to hear Magneto call somebody a nigger.
Yep. When he said that shit, I was like, there's something about when a white actor says it, you're like, you say that shit. You said that before, man.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't acting that good. You ain't that good an actor.
Jermaine Fowler had a bit where he was saying, I don't want to ruin it, but it was an old bit that he had, like saying, like he would, if he was on set and a white actor was saying nigger too well, he would like fight the guy. And he was like, Jermaine, you're the mic guy. He's the sound guy, but he's just all, I fucked it up. Anyway, but he also produced another black movie, the first Hunger Games. So I think he knows. He knows
race. Another black movie, the first Hunger Games.
Yeah. That District 11. What was that? What was the black district? Was it 11?
District 11, yeah.
That was some real shit, man. That was some good.
They worked on trees.
They were agrarian and the agriculture and shit. Yeah, so I liked the acting. It was grounded in a reality. And also this parallels the time, so the same time this was going in 1971, the same thing was, Remember the Titans stuff was playing out.
It was in the 70s. Yeah. You saying that just made me think that, yeah, it was about the same time, wasn't it?
It was 1971, you know, mm-hmm. And my dad was around that time, like, living in the air.
My father just got home from Vietnam like that cat did.
And it's interesting that these are...
Like the cat in the movie did.
And it's post, it's kind of, can you say it's post-Civil Rights era? The 70s?
Yes, because that was after the Civil Rights Act was signed in 64.
Malcolm X was dead, King was dead.
No, King was still alive in 71.
68, he died in 68.
He died in 68?
Yeah.
Was it 68?
Yeah.
68 when he died? Damn, I thought it was in 70, like 72.
No.
68, God, all that shit is starting to bleed together, man.
Yeah, so those guys were
getting further and further, because we're getting further and further away from it, and all that shit is starting to bleed together.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's modern times. And when I think of Durham, North Carolina, and I think of, you know, bringing Remember the Titans into the picture, Alexandria, Virginia.
I go by that school three times a week.
T.C. Williams.
I go right by T.C. Williams.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, you think like Durham, North Carolina, a bastion of education. You know, you think about everything that's all the colleges and universities around in that Research Triangle area. And it's just like, and you wouldn't expect it to be this bad, but it was.
And a lot of senses, it still is. I mean, there were still, you listen to Will Cain, it's not, but
Will KKK.
Well, that was in Mississippi where they were the Confederacy, the Confederate flag, they were marching on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
But over in Durham, they still have fucking Confederate monuments up. They're still fighting over that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
Was
you
it
would
on Duke's campus?
On Duke's campus?
Yeah, they got like they have a Confederate. Yeah, Google that. Look it up.
Oh wow!
But they're fighting over, and I think they decided to put the shit away, and people are protesting.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. I just didn't think because I was like, because I didn't know. I think I had heard of Ann Atwater, but didn't, you know, I didn't really know much about her. And you know, one thing,
but you still really don't after watching the movie. No. You know everything about the guy, but you don't really know anything about Ann Atwater. Where's her husband at?
She had two of them.
Had she had a husband?
She had two.
You know. Okay, well, you don't know that in the movie.
No, you know everything about
CP. You know that he had been a baseball player. You know that he didn't know how to talk to his wife. You knew that he was in the Klan. You knew he had a lot of respect for people in the military. But you didn't really know anything about Ann Atwater other than that she was a community organizer. She had two girls. And what else? What else do you know about her other than that?
I guess we didn't.
Community organizer. She had two girls. She stood up for herself really well, and she eats beef ribs like a fucking savage. What else did you know about her?
You know, I guess they did. There was a thing on Shadow and Act that she explained why it wasn't necessary for people to know much about her character in this movie. I didn't listen to it, but I'm trying to go and find it on Shadow and Act's website, mm-hmm. and they keep retweeting that they hate this movie. All the people on it, they keep hating it.
I can see why people didn't like it, but I can also see why people didn't like Remember the Titans. I did.
Yeah, I did,
you know,
too.
But I can see why people didn't like it. But there was parts of this movie that I didn't like. If you want to keep going to what we did like before we get to what we didn't like.
Yeah, well, I mean, I thought it made me look stuff up.
Yeah.
It made me want to talk about it on the podcast.
Right.
I like the acting. I would say because I feel like what we do, Randolph, as artists, and film and TV, you try to change people through your medium or through the way that you. The movie is about, you know, people clapped after the movie and stuff, and it was a mixed audience. It's like you see this stuff. Well, what are you going to do? Is it going to make you a better person? I don't know if people look at this as being disposable, but I think it is important, just as it's important to have a movie like Us be a predominantly black cast, all black cast, you know, main characters. You have a movie like Black Panther. I think it's good to know these heroes, you know, just even though they didn't dunk a fucking basketball or play football. I think it's important to learn about people like Ann Atwater. Could they have gone further in depth? Of course they could have. But within the world of this film, it was the CPS Ellis character that needed to change. And he did have more. It was a tougher road to hoe for him. And Ann Atwater is looked upon as being stoic and for the people. You learn that she's somebody who cares about her community. And
That's true, but she's one-dimensional. She's for the people. That's it. That's all we know about.
Yeah, we don't even know
what drives her motivations other than she's for the people. There was a lot of black people there who didn't act in the manner she acted. So what's her motivation? We don't know that. We know CP's motivation. It's told to us repeatedly.
Let me see if I can...
It's wrong. His motivations are wrong.
I want to see if I can get this to Taraji.
We don't know anything about his motivations, about her motivations.
No, we don't. It would be nice.
That's a choice that they made. Mm-hmm. Filmmakers made and she made. So I didn't care for that.
Let me see.
Even in Green Book, we knew his motivations for going down south,
right,
to open up doors for other black artists. So he's going to put himself in an uncomfortable position to open up doors for other black artists.
We know she wanted better schools and better living conditions.
Right, right.
She's an advocate.
But that just makes sense.
Yeah.
Why is she such an outspoken advocate? You don't just come to that out of nowhere one day.
Right. I want to try to get.
You know, why was she
Randolph,
so tough?
Let me see if I can play this piece for Taraji of her.
You got me thinking about this.
Well, that's fine. Let's see if I can get this from Shadow and Act. Hold on. Let's see if we can get this.
How do you respond to the critique that Anne wasn't represented more in a three-dimensional way? Like, we saw a lot of her activism, but we didn't see, outside of that a lot more. And how would you respond to that sort of critique?
I haven't got that critique. That's the first time I'm hearing about it. So you gotta give me a minute. I think our purpose for the movie is to really reflect the times and what's going on now. And that's why the activism was probably more important than her personal life. We put some in there to show her and him and how they were very equal as far as how much they cared for their family. But the story and the impact of the story is about how she got this man who was very different from different polar opposites to change his heart. And I think that's more important. That the act that she did to get a man that was Ku Klux Klan, the president of that chapter,
Cyclops, whatever,
to change his hateful heart to love, that's a more important story to me. I mean, I love Anne, and I'm sure her private life was very important, but you only got 2 hours to tell the story.
That's right, yeah.
So if someone else would like to write another story about her and her life, do it!
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I disagree.
What?
I do. I need to know something about what is her motivation to make her even talk to this dude?
Mm-hmm.
What is in her? What is in her? What happened to put something in her to make her go from "I'm not sitting next to this motherfucker" to "now I'm willing to pay for his child to have his child have a private room"?
I think for the greater good of the community.
Okay, now if that is the truth, I need to know why. What made her into this activist? That's not a small thing, because, like I said, there are who is called to be an activist? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What drives you to do that? Something does, particularly at that time, because she's putting her life on the line. You know what I mean? She's jumping into people's faces. She's risking going to jail. Mm-hmm. She's risking being killed. There's a terrorist organization floating around that could kill her kids, threaten her, shoot her house up. So what is it that drove her? I don't think that's a small thing. What's her motivation?
Well,
you know, how'd she get there? We knew what Martin Luther King was because he told us. You know, we knew what Medgar Evers was because they told us. Ralph Abernathy, Bayard Rustin, we knew what all their motivations were. And the Thurgood Marshall.
I agree with you. I think there should.
What makes you so forthright?
I would have liked to have seen more, based on what they gave us, I thought, based on the world of this film, I thought like he was the one that was going through the most change. And
well, he was. That's a definite. That's not even a question. The thing is, like, I only know and Atwater in this one dimension.
Mm-hmm.
I know him in quite a few. I know him in fully formed all kinds of dimensions. I only know Anne Atwater in one dimension,
and
I want to know her in more dimensions.
And that's kind of the history in cinema, right? In America, at least American filmmaking.
Exactly. Like, and I don't like it.
I'm not a fan of it either, Randolph. But I tell you,
I know you. I know you're not. I want to know I want to know a fully fledged person. I don't want to just know. We just plop right into Anne's life and she never changes from the moment we meet her to the moment it's over.
It's like the movies happens and begins in medias res, where it's just like all this action is happening. It's really 2 weeks. I had to think about it. I was like, damn, this was just 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's not a biopic. But you low key get one. And I guess maybe am I desensitized by this? You think about when I started starting to get into film and really enjoying it. I think about a movie like Cry Freedom.
Yeah.
Where like the Kevin Kline character is supposed to be the audience's eyes and ears on Steve Biko, Denzel's character. You kind of know about about Steve Biko and everything, but it's from a white man's perspective. You get a movie like, what's the movie where Forest Whitaker plays Idi Amin?
Oh, The Last King of Scotland.
The Last King of Scotland, where it's this white man and he's friends with Idi Amin, or he has this relationship with him. You got On Until Green Book, and there's probably a couple, several others, which is kind of annoying where, you know.
Well, the Miles Davis movie, they had to invent this white man to tell the story.
In order to get this shit even made.
Like, so they invent the Ethan Hawke character. He doesn't exist.
And I
Ethan Hawke, no, it's not. It's an English actor.
We already talked about Magneto. Who's Dr. Professor X?
Well, Professor X is that's a different dude in the Miles Davis movie. It's a different guy.
It's not Professor X.
No, you know what it is, Professor. Is it
James
Professor
McAvoy?
X? Is it James McAvoy?
Yeah, I thought so. Let me see.
In that movie, sure, not the blonde one.
Miles Ahead.
The one that Louis said he wanted to fuck.
Oh, Ewan McGregor. It's Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor. Yeah.
Okay.
It's Ewan McGregor.
All right.
It's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Young Obi-Wan. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, man. Like, it's a history of that shit, and it's fucking annoying. Like, I don't want the listeners to think that I'm just. Oh, I mean, that's what they. You know, that's just kind of the format. But with Remember the Titans, though, you got to know Herman Boone.
Exactly. You knew what he was. You knew what drove him.
But it was just like things were happening to him. And it's like everything kind of, they're like, oh, you're a race man and you're this. And maybe that coach was the white coach that, is it Will Patton? That Will Patton played.
Will Patton, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. He was just kind of like, hey, this is not, you know, he was, things were happening to him, but it's Denzel. So you're going to get a fully fleshed out Herman Boone for the most part.
Right. Yeah, he's fully formed. He's fully dimensional.
Yeah.
He's a forthright man, strong man. Cared about the kids he trained, no matter what. You know.
That's a
cared enough to be hard on them. Mm-hmm. You know, when they needed to be. You know.
That's sort of a thing, man. And when it comes to these two movies like this, I didn't like that. I would have liked to have seen more of what, I agree with you. I'd like to see what more of what made Ann Atwater tick.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, you kind of grow up with women like that sometimes, or, you know, you kind of have people like that in your family. She's basically big mama.
Yeah. Well, something made her like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that is something that I would be interested in seeing. But one thing that I don't like, am I taking shots at Shadow and Act? I mean,
if they open a door up, you got to walk through it.
It just seems like this is a genre that people don't appreciate, that people don't like to see. I don't know if it's like the slave movies that people don't like to see, or they don't like to see us in racial strife and then end in some type of harmonious existence. Maybe that's too soft for them. Because I don't think that Green Book was a bad movie. I thought
Green Book. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't think Green Book was a bad movie. It's like we're beating a dead horse when we talk about it, but it's just like I don't like how. I don't like how white people feel about it, but
yeah, because well, I can tell you, I know why you don't like it. You don't like it because, white people feel like, see, everything will be better racially.
Yeah,
all we have to do is get to know each other
and eat chicken. You know?
And there's hints of that in this.
Yeah,
but the difference in this. Is that the white character is required to give of himself.
Right. And I think there was...
And in Green Book, the black character, I mean, he gives everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the white character gives nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, the white character has to give everything.
He was forced to see the humanity.
He gives a lot.
He was forced to see people's humanity. He was forced to
look at himself,
and there's that forced introspection that, you know, we constantly have to be aware of ourselves and our surroundings and how we may or may not affect people who don't look like us. It's like that scene when the guy was saying, you know, we feel helpless because we can't, you know. Protect our kids. And that was an important, I think that was an important scene.
That's the scene that we know,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can tell you as a father, I think about that shit all the time.
Right.
You know, my daughter is seen by teachers as more sexual, more louder, five times more likely to be thrown into jail or out into school or out of school for being a kid. Even with the white mother. So it's like 2.5 times. Let's say it like that.
Mm.
But that's still more than the others. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's still more than them, because no matter what you can say about my daughter, you know what you can't say about her? Well, that's a little white girl. You're never going to say that.
Yeah.
That's never going to be said about her. You know what I mean?
And it's a thing where it's like, it's the whole, the Baldwin thing, you know, where he's like, well, it's got to be a nigger so I can feel like I'm good.
Right, right.
And so I can feel like I'm better than somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
why did you have to invent the nigger?
Right. And I even think about like the what's going on today as far as that character, the Maddie character, where she gets threatened and then she changes her vote. You know,
yeah, that was a big thing. There was two things. One was what we were saying about, you know, he learns when he does that monologue at the end,
mm-hmm.
where he learns that all this stuff. So not only does he learn about himself, he's learning that all these things he's been told are false.
Right.
Everything is false that you've been told, and he came to grips with it. Most people can't come to grips with that.
He's like a racist Neo.
Yeah. He learned, like, you know, you've been telling us we got to take care of our own. Well, here's a guy who fought two tours in Vietnam, and you're fucking with him like this?
Right.
Not offending him. You know, because you've been telling me, you know, it's like American History X when he goes to prison and he realizes that the Aryan mob inside the prison is working in conjunction with the other mobs to sell drugs.
Hmm.
It's like, well, you're the one telling me that these people are good enough to work with, but you're not good enough to be around, but you're working with them to make money.
Yeah.
You know. I don't do that on that side. And that's how he felt. Like, this guy employs black people. So he's still a white man who owns a business, and we're going to fuck him over like this?
Yeah.
You know? And and to that white dude's credit, he was like, fuck you, I ain't changing my vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He looked him in the face when he said it.
Yeah.
I vote yes. You know, with that. But I mean, look, he served two tours of combat. He's not fucking with you. You don't scare him.
Right. Right.
You know, And I remember growing up, you know, my father was career military, mm-hmm. and he came out of Vietnam with a Medal of Valor. Well, he served in combat. And at the time growing up, I thought about it. Yes, because I texted you on the way home. I was walking. I said, I got to think about some things as I was walking. Because I walked down to the movie and walked back home.
Oh, you walked?
Yes. Yeah, it's about a mile. And I was thinking about it. It's probably a little bit more. I was thinking about it as I was walking. You know, my father, the only white friends he had were other military guys.
Mm.
And I really thought about this. I was like, yeah, the white friends he had, which means the white friends that I had, a lot of them, were friends of my father. They were military guys.
Hmm.
You know? And most of them had been in combat. At that time, because it was right around the time of Vietnam, and they were all career. So they had all been in combat.
Wow. Yeah.
It was just a different, it was like that guy, you know, saying, yeah, I trust him. The only person I trust more than him is my wife. You trust him? You trust this nigga? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in combat with him. Yes.
Right.
And he and the same combat I was in, he was in.
And he was braver than me.
Yeah, and he said, and he was braver than me.
Do you think that we, as not necessarily as black people collectively, but just Americans, most people that are, I don't know, late 20s, 30s on up, are we just not immune to things that can kind of inharmonious or be kind of like saccharine to a certain degree?
How do you mean?
I don't know. Like, because this movie kind of had a happy ending. They integrated the schools and like they were a friendship was formed.
Well,
and you see the
yeah.
end credits and all that shit.
For me, which, by the way, those end credits were something that also kind of pushed the movie over for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, in Green Book, I know we keep going back to Green Book, but
yeah.
the Green Book is the obvious comparison.
Sure.
But it's far superior to the Green Book, because in the Green Book, you don't get any of that shit at the end.
No.
You know that they were friends because they went on a tour. They went and they spoke together for years afterwards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you know that they were friends. All that is easily accessible.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. And Green Book was just like, yeah, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
I suppose they were doing this together. I mean, my dad told me he was, so I guess he was. Hey, did you see Dr. Shirley around your house? Well, no, but my dad said he was. Well, how do you know? What do you mean? You mm-hmm. never saw him around the house? I thought they were friends.
Right.
You know. Did you talk to Dr. Shirley's family? No. What? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in this, there's home video footage of them dancing and laughing and yucking it up, you know?
Right.
And then they went to universities and spoke, so.
Yeah, I just.
Was that thing of the white guy having to give stuff up. One thing that I didn't like was like when that girl, they went to her house and terrorized her.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
The other, here's the thing about that, I was thinking about this on the walk home.
Okay.
That, you know, it made me relate to what's going on today where, listen, that guy, CP, up to the moment of turning away, that guy was a terrorist.
Yeah.
That guy was a terrorist.
But Randolph, it was okay for him to be that way.
I know. It clearly had to have been. That guy was a terrorist. He terrorized people. They show you that. Point blank in the beginning when they shoot that woman's house up
mm-hmm.
because she was dating a negra.
Yeah.
You know? So they wait for her to go upstairs and they shoot up her living room to spark terror into her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go to that woman's house and they terrorize her to get her to change her voice. They're terrorists and we don't call them that.
You know, you and I do.
CP. I know. You and I do. Well, who the fuck are we? the greater society doesn't. So you can transfer that to what's going on today.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
And that maintaining just their whiteness. Like, she's just like, I got to maintain my whiteness. I'm... Fuck all these niggas.
Okay. Daddy loves you. You all right? You tired? I'm going to lay down. My daughter can't tell me goodnight.
Black dads.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just
you know, he didn't have the, he's a terrorist, and we just kind of glossed that fact over because I don't even think we refer to the Ku Klux Klan as a terrorist organization. They are. That's what they did.
Definitely. Well, what do you think
about today? Those people in Charlottesville, they were terrorists, and we don't call them that. Matter of fact, our president says there's good people on both sides. They're terrorists. The Proud Boys, where you and I know comedians who would call themselves Proud Boys, we do. They're terrorists. They try to spark their change by inciting terror in people. And the reason why they do that is because it makes them feel better about themselves. But they do it to strike terror into people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the man who, anybody who's done a shooting, they're terrorists. They do that to strike terror. The fucking white boy who went into the church and shot the church up, shot those people dead.
Yeah.
He did that to spark terror into the black community. We know that because he told us that. He's not crazy. He did it. He did it purposely. He's a terrorist. We don't call them that, you know. And we never even talk about the fact that this guy's a terrorist in this movie. That bothered me. That and the fact that we let his wife off the hook. You know, we make his wife into a sympathetic character when he says, you know, Ann Atwater's daughter looked at me like I'm a monster. And the wife says, well, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, bitch, but you're married to him. You're married to a terrorist. Not only you're married to him, you had children with him.
They made her more sympathetic than the wife of, on Black Klansman.
Well, the wife on Black Klansman, that's more realistic.
Yeah.
That's ultimately, in the end, I don't care how nice you are, how much jams you take to somebody, you know, you are the supporter of a terrorist.
Right.
That's it. End of story. Black Klansmen, that was a terrorist organization. Think about how they're training. They're in the woods shooting guns. Okay? Isn't that what ISIS and the Mujahideen do? They practice shooting guns and stuff like that. That's kind of what they do, right? It's the same shit.
I mean, they showed that shit. See, that's a thing, man. Like, I get why Shadow and Act is doing what they're doing, but I think they're too dismissive.
Right.
I think they're too dismissive because when you look at a movie like this, I think you can show this movie. You know how comic book movies have gotten better since we were kids?
Yeah.
I think these civil rights movies have gotten better too. You know what I mean? Like, I think, like, as a genre, the nigger count is good. You're seeing stuff.
Yeah, which definitely makes it more real immediately, right off the bat.
Yeah, and it's not, it's sanitized, but you can see that somebody like you can say, like, if you were a teacher and you screen this movie for your class, you're teaching eighth or ninth grade or something, high school kids. And you could say, well, what do you think about the wife? What do you think about CP's
right.
wife? You could bring that's a means for conversation.
Yeah, well, I would definitely have that conversation.
Just that, like, oh, he was cute because he played baseball.
And he played baseball, and he was so cute, and he was handsome.
Yeah,
you know he's a terrorist.
Right.
He pulled out that gun in the parking lot, put that shotgun together to spark terror into people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a terrorist does, you know. And I like the scene where Ann Atwater said, "You're a coward, CP."
Yeah,
you know, because that's what they are. That's why they travel in packs.
Right,
they're cowards.
It tries to let them off the hook too, where it's like you know, I think of like the opioid crisis and all that stuff, and I think about how like that was a problem. Because now more white people are dying from that than, you know.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
You know,
that's the only reason it's a problem.
And it's sort of like how, God, I'm going to make this comparison. What the fuck? Why did I bring that up? Oh, my God. Chris, you're too young for this. How it's like, he's like, he didn't have a place. He didn't have a fan. He felt like he didn't belong anywhere. And when he got inducted, he cried. Like, but like, you know, where these young black kids find a gang or some shit, or people that take them in, you know, it's the same thing.
It's funny you should say that, because that's the first thing I thought when I was watching it. I was like, yeah, it's a gang.
Yeah.
It's a gang. It's the exact same thing when somebody joins the Crips or the Bloods, mm-hmm. the Gangster Disciples. You join for the exact same reason. You don't feel like you belong anywhere. You don't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
You join this group and you have something. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah. But it's like
But we're looked down upon and they are exalted.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not exalted, at the minimum, they're not looked down upon.
Right.
Even though you're in a terrorist organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, yeah. Because I think you can get more out of things like this than just say, it's easy to say it's cute, so you can get a retweet from a fucking Twitter feed to say, my white coworker said it was good, and I don't like it. You don't know what you like. I think this movie has more merit than people want to give it. But again, I'm somebody that can think for himself. But you know, whatever.
Yeah, and you're also somebody who's watching a lot of movies.
Yeah, I love movies.
You can see you can kind of see the wheels turning.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people can't see the wheels turning.
Yeah, because it's like I'm looking at the wife, and I'm just like, Anne Haitian, and it's just like, so who are you going to fight next? I'm like, that's interesting that she says this shit, but she's married to him.
Exactly. Like, you're married to a fucking terrorist, I'm going to fight you next. You next, bitch.
It's just like the Chappelle. I keep thinking of Dave Chappelle. Like, you were in on the heist, but you mad about your cut.
You just didn't like your cut. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And it's just like,
come on, white woman, you know what it is.
Yeah. So it's like,
the heist isn't like your cut.
What are we doing here? But it's at the same time.
White director, though, you're still going to exalt white women. You're not going to lay anything at their feet also.
No, but it's interesting that she had that dimension to her. You know, it's, what do you think, like, the wife in, like, Black Klansman, who was the guy?
The wife in Black Klansman was far more interesting to me
mm-hmm.
than the Anne Heche character.
Yes.
In this. Because I'm like, that's the realness.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be married to a terrorist and not be down for the cause.
Right.
How's that possible?
Right. The president. The president.
Right.
Of the KKK.
How's
Durham.
That possible?
Yeah.
You know, you're taking calls from people in the Klan to deliver messages to him. How's that possible?
Ricky said to call him back.
You know, they didn't say, come on out. They said, hey, you're burning crosses, so wear your cross-burning gear later on tonight as you terrorize another black family.
Yeah.
Oh, exalted Cyclops. I'm like, how's it possible that she's just, and then she goes to hang out with this black woman, and she drinks her sweet tea.
Mm-hmm.
And just sits in that comment. That's not possible. How's it possible?
Yeah.
You know, that things like that I had a problem with.
How did you feel about that scene where those young black boys were going to mess up that Klan outfit? And she's like, no.
I don't know if it was true or not. I would assume it was. I don't know. I would like to hear Ann Atwater talk about it. Why?
Well, she's dead, Randall.
If just looking at the scene, I understand why she would respond that way.
Yeah.
Particularly at that time, 71, Carolina, you know.
Read up on it.
Also, strategy-wise, you can't do that.
Right.
Because strategy-wise, you're playing right into their strategies. But let's back up. Why are you allowing the uniform of a terrorist organization to be placed inside this place when you're trying to bring people together?
Because they sung gospel songs. I was like, what the fuck?
Right. Right. Why are you equating equal weight of gospel music to the singing of gospel music to the uniform of this terrorist organization?
Mm-hmm.
You know, now part of that, which I don't know if the filmmaker meant to show us how, I don't know, it could be me reading more into it than what he was trying to show, but it could be that the thing of how these things are given equal weight and they're clearly not.
Right. And that's something that we have to do.
But like, on the other side, but I'm like, does he have that kind of nuance? Is he that smart, or is he just doing that? Is he just giving them both equal weight?
He was a producer of Hunger Games, so.
Oh, well. Do you remember when Owen Benjamin said that the Ku Klux, the Black Panther Party was like Ku Klux Klan? Remember that?
No, but I've heard that before, which is not.
Yeah, that shit like that bothers me. Like, you're giving them the exact same weight because you want things to be equal. No, one is a terrorist organization, and one is an organization that helped a community.
That's just gaslighting. I look at a statement like that as gaslighting and this verbal judo that white people do to try to right. make you feel like you're inadequate or the things that you say don't make sense.
Right. So there's a sense of that in this movie, not in a nefarious way though of the verbal judo.
Right. I don't think
just in the way of this is just how their minds work at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then as black people, we had to acquiesce and shit, still have to in a lot of ways, like to let them to get a little bit from them, you know, like to just
and I don't.
No.
Maybe the masses of black people do, but we don't.
Yeah.
We can be the ones that say, fuck that. It's not.
Yeah.
You just have to be willing to say it. And right. Atwater was someone who was willing to say it.
Right.
That's why she was a community organizer, stuff like that. Again, circling back to that, I'd like to know how she got to the point where she could just be the one who would be like, fuck that.
I'm sure if I was teaching this class, a history class, and I would get some supporting text for this. Because I would say, you know, like what?
Yeah, I would have to.
What did you find in the movie that you didn't in the book? What was different from the articles that we read? Blah blah blah, and then because it's also like when I because as a communications major, you're kind of taught to siphon things from different sources, even though it might be opposing or you know different from what you think, but to gather all this information and then formulate an opinion about it and you know I just feel like just somebody like I don't know what how where the it all stems from, but I think it's important to learn about these people. If you say oh man like going back to Greenwood, Dr. Shirley, they didn't do him right in that movie. I want to learn more about him.
No.
And I read.
I went and started looking.
That's what I did too. Yeah.
Lectures and stuff like that, and I was like, "This is not right."
Yeah.
so I looked them up.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I think that's the power in film, as well. You know, to make you look stuff up and read and put things in context and things like that. Before we go,
right.
I wanted to. I mean, what else do? Would you recommend this movie? What grade do you give it?
I give it a strong B+.
Yeah, I would say I would say that's about
right. Which is exactly what I gave. I gave Return of the Titan or Remember the Titans B+, and by B+ I mean like an 89 B+. Mm-hmm. You know, I gave it like an 89 B+.
I like that.
This one I would give probably 89, 88. Same thing, B+.
I wonder would I go slightly higher with just for my own agenda. I
mean, if you chose to give it like a 90, 90, yeah. 91.
Like an A-.
Yeah. A-, yeah.
Yeah,
I could see that.
Just because it was evocative of so many things in this conversation that you and I are still talking about this 2-3 days later.
Right.
And
I give it the B+ because of the wife.
Yeah.
You know, and the not fleshing out Anne.
Yeah.
You know? You showed me everything about CP.
Right.
You showed me little things about CP, like when he talked, like I said, when he talked to the guy who owned the hardware store.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And CP coming to realization. here's one thing though that we didn't really talk about: how the Klan was used as the strike force for the civilized white folks.
Yes. It was also
that's happening today.
Because you said that, I think that's another reason for my high mark for it. Because it was almost like a political thriller too.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like the backroom shit. All these
political machinations happening, and the Klan, which would basically be the poor white folks, are being manipulated.
Yes.
By these people above them, is you are using them to keep the black people in place so they don't lose power.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all this is about. We're going to lose power to black people.
Like those meetings at night, the cars pulling up.
In the cars. It's like they're fucking criminals.
The hurdy-gurdy man song playing. I said, okay, you know some fucked up shit is going to happen.
Shit's happening, yeah. It's like they're fucking criminals, meeting on back roads, in cars.
Bruce McGill's character, Carvey Olam, where he was like, well, CP comes to his house. He said, hey, man, I got donors here. What are you doing right in, at my house?
Yeah.
You know, like that was like, and then them going to get Bill Riddick, you know, I thought that was interesting too. They got him.
Yeah.
I wondered if they
I got it. I got a guy. I just went in, and the guy saying, you think I don't know that? Well, I know you know. I just want to make sure I know that. I just want to make sure you know that before I go get this guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to go get this guy.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
There was also a sense of, even though this white guy who calls the Bill Riddick character is still on the, is I guess, it would be quote unquote, on the right side of things, he's still ordering Bill Riddick around. I've seen an hour. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's that would happen to any character. Like if he was, I mean, that guy is the Bill Riddick character is like, okay, I got to go. An hour. Yeah. Okay. I guess I got to. Yeah. That was interesting. I wonder, did he think that was going to go another way?
He did. He said that at the thing. He said, when I first got the show together, I thought, there's no way this is going to work.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way this is going to work. Remember he said that when they interviewed him?
Mm-hmm.
When the real Bill Riddick was like, oh, there's no way this is going to work.
I like that character a lot. I would have loved to have played that.
It was your role.
And Shadow and Act would have hated me.
As soon as I saw it, I thought it was just Chris's role.
Me too. I was like, fuck. But there'll be more. Man, I liked it. I think it was a political thriller, part racial strife, good civil rights movie.
Terrorism and high nigger count.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't really go wrong after you've seen Us and Shazam. You want to see a little history.
Shazam's the next one for me to go to and just kind of lighten up my spirits a little bit.
Yeah, we've got. What do you? I want to see that Aretha Franklin movie, Amazing Grace.
They played the trailer, and I'm not a real gospel music guy, but I'm like, I guess I gotta go see this shit.
I know. Yes. You kind of have
I saw
to.
This. I gotta go see that.
I know. Like know? I kind of want to see it. It's gonna.
Like, oh look, there's Mick Jagger sitting in the audience. Nah, I gotta go. If he was in the audience, I ain't got no choice but go. Huh?
Yeah, and he's white, so
took his white ass into the and watched a live thing. I gotta go see this shit.
Yeah, yeah. So I hope
the ancestors won't forgive me. I gotta go.
Supposed to be in wide release. It'll probably play at that theater by you in Shirlington. I'm sure it will.
Yeah, that's where they sort of play there.
Like, yeah.
If not there, East Street down in D.C.
Now, I want to get your thoughts on the Kyle Korver article for the Players Tribune. Because I saw that.
You know, JL sent it to me and Rod today.
Oh, I sent
that's
it to you.
That's the first time I saw it.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you sent it to me later.
Yeah,
JL is sending it to me in the morning.
JL said, you know
on
how
Twitter.
He, you know how he is. He said a couple hours ago, he said, Barstool Sports has asked John Rocker to write a rebuttal to Kyle Korver.
That's hilarious.
And I wrote to JL, I said, did you ghostwrite it?
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. That is funny, John Rocker. I can see that.
Yeah.
That's the thing I'm waiting on. I'm waiting on the rebuttal reply, not from the dumb fan. I'm waiting on the rebuttal reply from the Will Canes of the world.
Oh yeah.
Like one of these learned ignorant white boys. Learned and ignorant at the same time. I'm waiting on the rebuttal reply from them.
Yeah. What did you think?
I like anybody who's willing to do some deep self-reflection.
Yeah.
And he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he is.
Because he said this. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it's just the deep self-reflection. Like, look inside yourself. You know, I know this guy and I still doubt him. That's always, I think I've said that more than once, that when James Blake got into it with that cop, that's my biggest fear.
Right.
Because if somebody comes out of nowhere and jumps on me, I'm going to start fighting them. You know, I'm not James Blake where I'm going to be like, I'll just lay here passively. No, I'm fucking fighting you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to get killed.
Right.
And then my name is going to get drugged through the mud. My wife is going to have to go to court and fight with these people. I'm taken out of my daughter's life. But then here's the big thing, is that there's going to be people who are going to go, well, what did he do?
Yes.
There's not going to be a lot. And a lot of those people are going to be white.
You'll be no angel.
Even some of them are going to be black. Well, you saw the stuff he used to posted online, so he must have did something to this fine officer.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen because we're all conditioned to believe that.
Right. And it's interesting, he leads with the Thabo Sefolosha story, and then he goes to the Russell Westbrook thing, and he's like, well, what did Russ do? Huh.
Right.
Still.
Right. Right. Because he hadn't done any reflection up to that point. Yeah. Or he had done, but he realized that even when you use self-reflection, you're still caught in the loop of it.
Right.
You know?
It's interesting.
Still caught in the loop of it.
It's good. It's good that he's trying to work it out. I think that's...
Yeah.
I think for the most part, that's all... I mean, that's the least you can hope for white people.
Yeah, well, he said that this is the least, this is the littlest thing I can do.
Yeah.
I haven't even really done anything. It's the least I can do.
Mm-hmm.
Is this.
Yeah.
The least thing I can do is this. You know, I play in a league that was built by black people. That's going to get a lot of people are going to get upset about that. But well,
John Wooden, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. But Larry Bird said that.
Yeah.
And people got mad. Yeah. I'm like, don't you think Larry Bird would know more about this than you would? you don't think that?
Yeah.
That he would know more about it than you do.
Yeah, man.
You know, where did he learn how to play Bird? Black guys on a basketball court. That's where I learned.
Yeah.
What, Larry? Yeah, that's where I learned.
But I think more people need to, hopefully will speak out on it. And it's something you don't find. You know, I was listening to Bomani and Pablo talk about it on High Noon, and they were saying that it's just something you don't find, this self-reflection, that you don't find in the NFL or other major sports.
Money, man. Because basketball players have a wider latitude.
And they have
do stuff like this.
And they have an identity.
Because they have more power. They have more power.
Yeah.
You have more power if you're an NFL, you're an NBA player.
Do you ever listen to that podcast, Knuckleheads?
No, who's that?
It's Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles. Like, they talk to current and former NBA players, and they just talk about the league. They talk about coming up. They usually lead off who was the first player when you got in the league to bust your ass, like anybody that like you didn't think would like. Murder you on the court and all that.
Yeah, who broke your ankles?
Yeah, and it's really good. I mean, like Baron Davis has been on it, Kevin Durant, Kyrie. They didn't ask him about the flat Earth though, but you know they're not.
Yeah, well, I would have. That's a first shit I've asked.
They're not journalists, but
hey,
you know.
Man, you believe the Earth is flat? Get the fuck out of here, man. This interview's over.
Yeah, but But yeah, so it's good to get the to get that perspective of these guys talking about stuff, because you don't normally hear players be candid about their lives and their careers. Always just like surface, superficial. Yeah, maybe you grew up poor and stuff like that, but we kind of want to know who you are. Not all of them grew up poor, right, but you know what I mean. You kind of want to know who they are, and it makes you – that's why, like, Rod asked me a couple of days ago, he's like, who's your team? And I was just kind of like, I like all these guys.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't – you know, I like LeBron and everything, but – I root for LeBron, but for the most part, I like all those dudes.
Yeah, they're all likable in a way. Even Antoine Walker, even those that are a little bit flawed.
Yeah.
You know? But for the most part, they seem to be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I definitely have ones I like way more than others. But even when somebody's getting torn apart, like Paul Pierce, you're still like, see, man, you shouldn't run your mouth. You're doing it in a friendly way.
Yeah, it's like, dude, he's an all-time great player.
Yeah, you're an all-time great player. He's not as good as this guy.
Yeah, he won more than you.
Just going by the numbers.
I would just say, I was like, oh, yeah, he's better than me.
Yeah.
And keep him moving.
Just keep him moving. You know, I would say this about Kyle Korver is, remember now, he is the outlier.
Yes.
He's not the norm, and people need to understand that.
Right.
He is the outlier. Barack Obama was the outlier, not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
People treated Barack Obama like he was the norm. Oh, racism's over because we elected Barack Obama. Barack Obama is the outlier. He's not the norm. The norm is the racism.
Yeah.
You know? So Kyle Korver is not the norm. He's an outlier. So we'll see what happens after this. But you see from the reactions of people to watch people's reactions to Kyle, they're going to be predictable.
Right.
You know, and the worst ones are going to be the liberal white people who, on the one hand, are praising Kyle over stuff like that, but on the other hand, are paying to get their kids into college and decrying affirmative action amongst their friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or again, praising Kyle Korver, voting for Barack Obama, but you don't want your kids to go to school with a child who looks like mine.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or say that, you know, my kid is not as smart as your kid or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are not outliers. Those people are normal.
Yeah.
And you don't know who the fuck they are.
Yeah.
Because they say this one thing to you and then the other thing they don't say, which is the only good thing that a guy like CP has going for him is that you know exactly where the fuck he stands.
Right.
And I'm not even saying that that's a good thing, because I don't like when black people say that. Well, at least I know that's not a good thing, though.
Yeah. But at least he's honest. But it's still like...
I'm like, that's not a good thing. It's still not a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's honest. He's honest that he's a foul human being.
Right.
What now? Mm-hmm. What now? He's a foul human being, and there's no consequences for him of being a foul human being. How? Explain to me the good of that, other than trying to stay away from him.
Yeah.
You know, I wish people would just act more like that out in the open. Do you? You think that'd be good? That's a good idea. You think so? Huh?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't.
I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
I just want them to be. I just want there to be, not even a consequence. I just want people to treat them, in the right manner.
Mm-hmm.
And our society doesn't. And I think that's Kyle Korver's realizing he didn't treat Thabo in the right manner. He didn't treat Russ in the right manner, which means he didn't just treat. If that's how you do, motherfuckers, that you know,
and that's supposed to be your friend.
Yeah, you see.
Yeah.
You did a motherfucker that you know.
And he's 38. He's a year younger than me.
Well, that's the conditioning that he's had leading up to 38. That's the conditioning of American society. That's the thing of the privilege. You're born into this. People say, well, children aren't born prejudiced. No, but you're born into this society.
Mm-hmm.
So from the minute you're in the society, you start being bathed in it. That's it.
Yeah.
Unless, and we don't act as such. And we have to.
Yeah.
We have to. It's like when people say that they don't understand how a 10-year-old boy knows that he's gay. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me with that bullshit?
Like, I think Dwayne Wade's kid is gay or something.
Is he?
They were showing his youngest one. Not at that debate. But he was at the Pride or something. No, they were like Instagram stories and stuff.
I mean, he might be. Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he is, good. He figured it out early. That's going to save him a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
That's going to save him a lot of trouble. You know? Great. You know, but to say that somebody doesn't know, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
You know, all of it goes together. It's all living in America. It's a big mosaic.
Yeah, like Kyle Korver was born in California, but then he went to high school in Iowa.
Yeah, well,
and then he went to college at Creighton. So that Creighton's in Nebraska. Yeah.
White.
Yeah, so it's like that is it's pretty white.
Yeah, and the black people he knew, he played with.
Yeah.
He played ball with. Other than that, beyond that, he don't know nobody black.
I mean, but you got to think he's around black people for most of his young life. Like his, at least being
What did he say? Even being around all these black people, it's still in you to think that.
Yeah. It's weird,
it's
though,
still
how.
In you to think like that.
You know how, like, and even Rod was saying this, I guess he said it yesterday on his, maybe the first podcast that he and Karen did this week as we are recording on April 8th. So maybe their Sunday podcast, he was talking about, what was he talking about? Oh shit. What's wrong with me? I'm too old. I might have to edit this out. I don't know, but he was just talking about, but he was saying something that was kind of,
we'll never know.
We'll never know. He was talking about how, like, fuck, I hate this. I'll edit this out. I don't know.
Leave it in. Let the people know.
I was trying to remember what he was. Man. I don't know. I'm my brain
don't
is.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Huh? Yeah, don't do drugs.
Don't smoke weed, kid.
Yeah, I think that's what's wrong with me. There's so many things I'm thinking about right now. You think about Creighton, Kyle Korver, white kids, black kids. Oh, shit.
You know, well, just being inoculated in whiteness, that even when you are exposed to blackness, you're around blackness a lot.
Oh, I know what I want.
Go on.
Okay.
No, you go.
It's like how black people, God forbid I cut you off for a change. Yeah. I think being black people, we are more welcoming than we are welcoming, and we forgive, we let people in a lot more. You know what I mean?
It's because we're pragmatists. And
yeah.
I didn't cut you off because I didn't want you to lose your train of thought because your ass is getting old.
Yeah.
No,
you know what it is? I'm tired. I've been up since 4:30 or 3 o'clock.
Used to making the pragmatic decision.
Yeah.
If they show, there's the scene in the movie where they go to the community, turns out to support him by buying gas from him.
Right.
You know, you came through for us. Now we will do for you.
And there was a, and
but
that was
until
a,
you do for us, we ain't doing for you.
And there was a tell at the beginning. I ain't selling no gas to no niggas.
Yeah, yeah, you saw that coming.
Yeah,
you know, but we're pragmatists.
Mm-hmm.
We're pragmatists, and we're very much into quid pro quo.
Yeah,
we have to be
right.
You know, do for me, I'll do for you.
I think that's a beautiful
and
thing.
If you're
in
not
our,
willing
too.
To do for, if you're not willing to do for me. Then I don't trust you.
Yeah.
Because if you're willing to do for me, that means that you got something invested in me.
Right.
And, you know.
And when we invest in each other.
I don't think white folks don't have that in society. I don't think. They don't need to. That's another thing. They don't need to.
They don't.
Malicious. They don't. It's not malicious. They just don't need to.
Yeah. And on that note, let's, I think this has been great, Randolph.
quid pro quo, baby.
Yeah, this has been awesome, man. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me about this movie.
Hey, man, thank you for getting me to go see the movie, because it gave me a lot to think about it, because I was not going until you said, go and we'll talk about it. I wasn't going to see it.
I don't think Rod was either.
I know. And like I said, I told Mike Fanazzo that he needs to go see it. I'm like, well, go ahead, man. And then we all thought it was going to be like Green Book.
Yeah.
That's why none of us were going.
I just think there's more than meets the eye to this thing. I've seen a lot of shittier movies than this one weren't as good. But
like I said, I give it a B+.
Yeah. A- for me. Well, Randolph, plug some stuff, bro.
In D.C., I'll be at the... I'll be at the Comedy Loft. Not the Comedy Loft. It's the one that, I can't even get the name of the fucking one down in Beer Baron.
That is the Comedy Loft, right?
The Comedy Loft. Yeah, I'll be at the Comedy Loft May 5th and 6th.
Okay.
With Maya DiGiorgio. Look on the website. Comedy Loft, Maya DiGiorgio in D.C. It's in the Beer Baron.
Three Guys on Podcast.
Hotel. Yeah, Three Guys on Podcast. Y'all already know. You can check me out on Medium. Medium.com, Randolph Terrence, where I write some things. I try to put them up on Wednesday or Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
One spot a week. I just write things as they come to me. I haven't decided what I want to write about yet this week. Just get at me on social media. Real Talk For You on Twitter. Randolph Terrence on Facebook.
All right.
Google it, brother. Everything is there.
All right. Thanks so much, Randolph. Take it easy, everybody.
Thank you.